We are in the middle of a series called Bingeworthy, and we are studying as much as we can on the life of Jesus, taking in his example, listening to his words, letting his life shape ours. And so we just finished season one, which was foundational to Jesus' story. We answered questions like, who is this? How did he get here? Why is he here? Now we are turning our study in season two towards those growing up years. Some of those awkward adolescent years, some of those challenging years, and we're going to learn some of the lessons that Jesus learned during this season of his life that really shaped who he was and helped him in his journey, listen to this, of becoming the Messiah. See, here's one of the challenges that a lot of us have. When we think about Jesus, we almost think of like instant potatoes Messiah. Like he just came out with messianic ready to wear. And we don't even think about the fact that, yes, we learned in season one that he is the God-man, fully God, but also fully human. And being human, he had to develop. He had to mature. He had to grow up. And so some of the lessons that Jesus learned in his growing up years are going to be some of the things that God is going to use to shape us as he leads us in the direction of our own life calling. And so these are some obscure kind of years, but they are incredibly important years. And they are the ones that I am super excited about studying. In fact, in the words of the famed theologian, Matthew McConaughey, all right, I am ready to look at this new season, and season two is going to be called the Growing Up Years. Episode one is all about commitments and confirmations. Commitments and confirmations. See, here's the thing, as we're learning as much as we can about Jesus, let's just be honest. I mean, we think of ourselves as followers of Christ, we love Jesus, but the simple truth is sometimes we don't know as much about him as we need to know. And some of these growing up lessons are the most critical things we need to focus in on. So we're going to talk about commitments today and confirmations. I want you to take your Bible and open with me to the book of Luke. We're going to go back to the beginning story. We're going to pick up just right after Jesus is born. So these are like some of the really early moments of Jesus' growing up years. Luke chapter 2, and we're going to look at verses 21 through 39 in just a moment. Now, as we read this text, what we're going to see is this is the moment when Jesus' parents bring him to the temple for his dedication. Now, this is very similar to what many of you have seen in a church when parents identify the awesome task, right, of raising a human being, and they feel overwhelmed by that, so they seek the help of their church family by having a dedication moment. And probably you've seen in your lifetime of going to church, parents brought up on stage, they're holding their baby, and they dedicate their child to the Lord, and they invite their faith family to help them in that endeavor because it's just so awesome. Raising kids is an awesome responsibility. And so in Luke chapter 2, we discover that Jesus' parents are going to do that. They're going to bring him to church, and they're going to have a dedication moment. Now, here's an honest admission about this particular passage. This is probably the most skipped over part of Jesus' life. In fact, I'd almost bet that you've never heard a sermon on the dedication passage of Jesus. Now, why is that? Well, one writer, author, pastor, Chuck Swindoll, you may know that name, he speculates as to why. Here's what he has to say. At first glance, there isn't much to see. Just a lot of mundane details about how Joseph and Mary fulfilled the customary obligations of first century Judaism. This is the kind of information parents like to tell, but no one wants to hear. Like Johnny's first haircut or Susie's first missing tooth. But Luke included only three stories from the childhood of Jesus, and this is one of them. This seemingly insignificant episode, typically bypassed when telling the story of Jesus contains some remarkable truths about Christ. Now, we are going to note some of these remarkable truths in the form of some commitments that we can make that can shape our faith walk. This is January, or December 30th. We're about to head into January 1st, and a lot of people make New Year resolutions. You resolve certain things in the new year. Well, I'm going to challenge you about making some commitments, and we're going to look at these truths through the eyes of some commitments, and we're going to do something a little different in the message. Every time we come to one of these commitments, I'm going to read it, and then I'm going to invite you to stand up. And if you would like to resolve or commit to that, then I'm going to lead us in saying it together. All right? So the first remarkable truth in the form of a commitment that we see in Jesus' dedication is this one. Let me read it, and then we're going to stand up and resolve it. All right? This year, I commit to a partnership with God, blending my efforts with His ability to see the best life results. Okay, you see that one? All right, let's stand together. And if you want to make this your commitment this year, you want to resolve to this partnership, let's make this pledge. Say it with me. This year, I commit to a partnership with God, blending my efforts with His ability to see the best life results. All right, sit down. We'll tease this one out. Talking about partnership. Now, there are two ways that people tend to live their life. One of them is they kind of put all the responsibility for life on their shoulders. So they put all of their hope in what they can do. So they put everything on their own shoulders. They carry all the weight. They take on the worry that comes when you bear the sole responsibility for how something turns out. Now listen, all of us do this from time to time. We just kind of put everything on us. We make our plans, and then we work our plans. And maybe somewhere along the way, we like pause to invite Jesus into our plans. Hey, will you give us a thumbs up, Jesus, on this plan? Will you kind of give me some credibility on this thing that I want to do? That's the way many of us will live our lives. The evidence of that, listen, is our prayerlessness. Come on. Let's just be real. We can live our life just day in and day out doing what we do, and there's no engagement with God in prayer. That prayerlessness is just a simple evidence that sometimes we just kind of put all of our hope in what we can do. Here's the second thing sometimes we will do, and that is we will passively sit back and put everything on God. Sometimes we'll just bear it all, but other times we'll passively sit back, put everything on God. We expect Him to do everything that needs to be done. We expect Him to provide all that needs to be included, to be solely responsible for the outcome, regardless of whether we put our best effort in or not. It's just all on God. And I think when we do that, we encourage ourselves that this is faith. I'm trusting in God. But the reality is, this is more laziness than it is trust. And both of these approaches, whether it's putting it all on our shoulders or we're just putting it all on God, whiffs in the category of forging the kind of partnership that we need to have as we walk with Jesus the right way. Our efforts combined with His ability is what produces the best life results. I had a daughter that was going through a job interview not too long ago, and as she was entering into the interview, she was very anxious about it because she wanted the job. And so we talked about this principle. I said, here's the thing. You need to go into that interview fully prepared. You need to confidently be able to share with that employer, you know, who you are, your experiences, what you can do to add value to the company. You do a good job with that. But then listen, you've got to lean on God to bring to the table things that you could never bring to the table. And if you'll forge that kind of partnership with God, then you're going to have peace. She got finished with the interview, didn't get the job, but she told me, hey, listen, I got total peace because I know I did the best job that I could do in presenting who I am and what I can do, and I was leaning on God for his partnership, and so my heart is at total peace. That's the kind of partnership we need as we move forward in our journey of following Jesus. Now, the Apostle Paul talks about this kind of partnership in our spiritual growth. Philippians chapter 2, verses 12 and 13. Listen to what he says. Work out your own salvation with deep reverence, for it is God who works in you both to will and to act in order to fulfill his good pleasure. You see in that passage, both of these components of the partnership, there is our effort, work out your own salvation, but it is God who works in you. God adds his ability to the mix to bring about the best result in our own spiritual growth and development. We have to learn how to strike that balance. Because listen, when it comes to our side of it, God expects that we're going to do our part. God is not going to learn for us. He's not going to study for us. God's not going to apply the truth for us. He's not going to open the Bible and read it for you. God's not going to go to church for you. Jesus isn't even going to believe for you. We have to be able to do our part, but in doing so, we trust God to do his part. And that partnership is what blesses us with the best life results. Now, I want you to see this in this first verse, verse 21. Look at the partnership that's being struck in the parenting that Jesus receives. Verse 21, 8 days later, so we're just talking about a week on the other side of Jesus' birth, when the baby was circumcised, he was named Jesus, the name given him by the angel even before he was conceived. Now, there are two details in that passage that highlight this partnership. The first one is circumcision. Circumcision. Jesus, a week after he was born, was marked in the tradition of the Jewish sign of the covenant between Abraham and God. And if you're taking notes, we could even call circumcision the sign of partnership. Let me tell you what I'm thinking about that. You might remember that God promised to Abraham a family. But the challenge in the fulfillment of that promise of family to Abraham is that Abraham and Sarah didn't have children. And they're pushing 100 years of age. They're just a few years short of being on the Today Show Schmuckers segment where we get the preview of all the folks who turn 100 on that day. They're just short of turning 100. Now, to pledge a baby to a barren couple is bold, but to pledge a baby and a family to a couple without kids who have aged out of the normal childbearing years, that's crazy. Another way to say that, it's impossible. But how many of you have learned in your faith walk that with God, come on, all things are possible? But in order to accomplish this impossible thing, God is going to work through a partnership because he is not going to do what he does with Mary, which is to have a conception of a child that that skirts around the normal processes of how you have a baby. So Mary's is an immaculate conception. Abraham and Sarah are going to have a baby. They got challenges to having a baby. They're going to have a baby, but they're going to have one through the natural processes. They're pushing 100. That means they're going to take some faith and some romance that hadn't happened in a long time. Grandpa going to have to love up grandma. And these are BC years before Cialis. You know what I'm talking about? So this is going to take some effort in order for them to see the fulfillment of the promise. But it's going to take more than just their effort. It's going to take supernatural ability added in order for this to take place. God is going to have to cause some miraculous things to happen in the natural process to make sure that the child is born. They got a part to play. God's got a part to play. Now, you may never have kind of processed this, but circumcision then can be looked upon in a way that gives us the sign of the partnership, because God mandated in light of this moment that every Jewish male reproductive organ be marked as a sign of this moment, where God strikes a partnership with Abraham to bring about the fulfillment of the promise. It's going to take their part, but also God's going to have to do his part. And so that mark of the circumcision was not a health ritual. It was a faith tradition that spoke to this very principle. It was intimate and it was personal, but it was there to remind them that we are in a partnership. You've got to do your part. But I'm pledging, the Lord speaking, I will do my part. The second detail in the text that speaks to the partnership is just the naming of Jesus. Now remember, an angel shows up to each of them, Mary and Joseph, and says, you're going to name the child Jesus, which is a Hebrew form of Joshua, which means God saves. Now the normal customary thing that would happen with a firstborn son is he would bear the name of his father. So in this case, it would be the custom, or it would be expected, that Jesus' name would be Joseph. But they had to break custom and they had to give him the name that God had already given him. And so in naming him Jesus, there is a partnership. God did his part in saying, this is what I want him to be called, but they would have to name him that. Give him the name of Jesus. Now, as Luke kind of unpacks for us this dedication, he edits most of the details of this whole dedication service so that we don't really focus on the rituals, but our eye is really drawn to this partnership action of Mary and Joseph doing their part. Look how many references, as we read through the next section of the passage, look how many references to their efforts to do what was required of them. Look at verse 22. Then it was time for their purification offering as required by the law of Moses after the birth of a child. So his parents took him to Jerusalem to present him to the Lord. So they offered the sacrifice required in the law of the Lord. Verse 27, Mary and Joseph came to present the baby Jesus to the Lord as the law required. Verse 39, when Jesus' parents fulfilled all the requirements of the law of the Lord, they returned to their home in Nazareth in Galilee. Now, think of the number of remarkable things that have been declared over their son, that he would save people from their sins, that he would be the light to the nations and the glory of Israel. All these incredible things have been spoken over the life of their son, but they don't go into neutral and just lean back and depend on God to do all of that. They understand as parents that they have a role in shaping Jesus' identity so that he can fulfill all of those promises that God has given towards Christ. They understand we've got a partnership. God, we've got to do our part, but you have to do your part. And so as you're thinking about your own faith walk and following Jesus this year, where do you need to work on your partnership? Do you need to be more active and put forward more effort? Or do you need to lean more into your trust of God, or both? But somewhere along the way, God is speaking to us about how we're going to partner with him in our following Jesus this year. Here's the second commitment, the truth in the form of a resolution. This year, I commit to let people speak into my life and encourage me to follow Jesus. All right, so let's stand together. If this is your commitment and your resolution, then say it with me. This year, I commit to let people speak into my life and encourage me to follow Jesus. All right, have a seat. Let's talk about this one. Now, from time to time, we all need a little help in discerning God's voice, in deciding what is God saying to me, what do I need to do, where do I need to go, how do I need to get there. And so we benefit by having people who can speak into our lives, especially at like crossroad moments. Not too long ago, I was in one of those places where I was just trying to figure out, what is God saying to me? And so I called a friend of mine who is a voice that I trust, someone that can speak into my life, someone that won't just kind of confirm things that they think I want to hear, but they'll speak the truth to me. And so I floated out there some things that I just felt like I was hearing God say to me. And then on the other end of the phone, there's an animation in their voice, and they just start to give me feedback and saying, listen, I totally see that, and have you considered this? And they started putting together the pieces, saying, man, I can see where God has led you in this, and how that's converging on this moment. And as they were speaking, I not only sensed their confirmation, but there was something about my heart that got encouraged, and I felt inspired. And it was like wind in my sails to move in that direction that God was calling me. And we all have moments like that where we need people who can speak into our lives, who can call truth, who can encourage, who can inspire, who can challenge. And so my question to you is, who speaks into your life? Who do you know that can speak into a dream, into a vision, into a hope, into a desire, into a conviction? Who speaks into your life? Joseph and Mary are coming off this incredible moment where Jesus has been born, but you gotta know that they're trying to put together all the pieces of what has happened to them, and it's crazy. I mean, you can see this young couple. I mean, they're teenagers. You can see them looking at each other going, what has just happened to our lives? I mean, think of our life the last year. Angels have showed up and talked to us. Our engagement got disrupted by this divine pregnancy. We got shepherds out in the fields hearing voices coming and telling us about things. I mean, what? And they got to be wondering, well, what is happening to us? And it's in this kind of crossroad season that God sends someone to speak into their lives. Look at verse 25. At that time, I love that, at that time, there was a man in Jerusalem named Simeon. He was a righteous and devout, and he was eagerly waiting for the Messiah to come and rescue Israel. The Holy Spirit was upon him, had revealed to him that he would not die until he had seen the Lord's Messiah. That day, the Spirit led him to the temple. So when Mary and Joseph came to present the baby Jesus to the Lord as the law required, Simeon was there. He took the child in his arms and praised God, saying, Sovereign Lord, now let your servant die in peace as you have promised. I have seen your salvation, which you have prepared for all people. He is a light to reveal God to the nations. He is the glory of your people, Israel. Somebody else shows up to speak into it. Look, skip down to verse 36. Anna, she's a prophet. She was also there in the temple. She came along just as Simeon was talking with Mary and Joseph, and she began praising God. In other words, she kind of amened what Simeon was saying. She validated that. She echoed that, we might say. And after these things were spoken into their lives, it's mentioned in verse 33 that Jesus' parents were amazed at what was being said about him. Now, quite frankly, it's amazing to us that they were amazed by that, because think of all the things that they had already been amazed by. These remarkable events that were all surrounding Christ's birth. I mean, that should have been enough, but it says that what was said amazed them. It was this moment of people speaking into their hearts that amazed them. The word amazed, it can have this jaw-dropping element to it, like, ah! But it's not just jaw-dropping, it's heart-lifting. They're amazed. Their hearts are lifted. They're encouraged. They were at a crisis moment, maybe thinking, what is going on? This is crazy. Can we even raise the Messiah? And now their hearts are lifted, all because someone's just spoke into their lives. Let me ask it again. Who speaks into your life? Now I want to ask you to do something over the next few weeks that might be challenging for you. You're going to hear a lot of announcement and introduction and invitation into what we call small groups or community groups. And as you hear that information unpacked over the next few weeks, I'm going to ask you to consider that this is the year that maybe you take that step of just moving from just kind of coming to the turning point experience, the worship time, and actually stepping into a smaller expression of body life where you can be around people who will speak into your life. Now, don't miss this. Joseph and Mary, part of the reason that they got this encouragement is because they were in the right place to hear the right words. They were in their faith community, and Simeon could speak into that, and Anna could speak into that. And sometimes the reason that our hearts are not lifted is we don't always have ourselves in spaces and places where people can speak into our heart that way. And so I'm asking you to just over the next few weeks, as you hear it, just consider that this is the year that God wants you to take that big, bold step and move into one of those smaller groups where you can be in position to have your heart lifted and encouraged and strengthened as people speak into your life. Number three, third and final commitment. Let me read it, and then we'll stand and resolve it. I commit to open myself up to something bigger that God may want to do in my life this year. All right, let's stand together. This commitment's on your heart, then say it with me. I commit to open myself up to something bigger that God may want to do in my life this year. All right, be seated. Now, let's just at least be open to that as a possibility, that God just may have something that he wants to do in your life that's bigger. Just open to that as a possibility. Because listen, it is easy for us to just kind of live our life with the daily grind of that's involved in, you know, getting the kids up and taking them to school and going to work and all. It's just easy for us to just kind of walk through the daily grind of life, and we just lose interest in anything bigger or anything beyond where we are at the moment. And I'm just saying, open your heart to the possibility God may have something bigger in mind for you than you ever thought or imagined. But you got to have your heart open to that. Because if you're not careful, God will have an intent for you and a hope for you and a desire for you, but we'll miss it because our heart's not open to it. God may have a burning bush in your future or a sycamore tree for you to climb, that you're going to miss it because your heart's just not open to it. And I'm asking you to resolve that in this coming year that your heart is open to what God may want to do. Simeon demonstrates in verse 25, he was open. Notice this, it says he was eagerly waiting for the Messiah to come. Eagerly waiting. You almost get the sense from that description that like Simeon would get up every day and like go, is this it? Is this it? Is today it? Because he's eagerly like expecting and waiting for God to do this special bigger thing that he's promised that he's going to do. There's just a sense that he has about him of some of us were open like this. God, if you want to. Available. Instead of our heart being open with anticipation of what thing God may want to do in our life this year, just simply because we are open to it. I've got a friend by the name of Brent. He was a faithful employee in this organization for about 10 years. About a year and a half ago, they came to him and said, you know, your services, we value them, but they're just no longer needed here. And he said that closed door was just so hurtful. And I couldn't help but feel just a little bit sorry for myself. And he said, you know, if I would have let myself, I could have easily just kind of parked by that heartbreak and thrown a pity party and just stayed in self-pity for just day after day, week after week, month after month, because I just felt so wronged by everything that had happened. But he said, you know, the Lord pressed upon me to have my heart open to what God was going to do in this new season of life. Don't let that hurt close your heart. You keep your heart open. And so he opened up his heart to just say, Jesus, whatever you want to do in this season of life, I'm going to be open to that. If he were here on the platform with me, he would tell you that right now he's experiencing the greatest fulfillment he's ever known in his life and career, but all because his heart was just open to Jesus. It wasn't closed by his hurt. It was open. And what might Jesus want to do in you and through you if you were eagerly waiting, open to what Jesus wants to do? If we'll resolve to commit ourselves to follow Christ like that this year, who knows what God will show up and do in our lives. These are the commitments, the confirmations that shaped Jesus to step into his calling of Messiah. These are the commitments, the confirmations God's going to use to shape you, to shape me, so that we step into our calling. Let it be.